You're listening to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Kayla DeRoche, and I'm here with a couple of guests. Could you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure. Hey, my name is Captain Mark Morin. I'm the new commanding officer of Air Station Kodiak, Alaska. I recently relieved Captain Melissa Rivera on June 10th of 2015.
Oh, welcome to Kodiak.
Yeah, thank you.
And we have someone else here.
I'm Petty Officer Kelly Parker. I work at the Public Affairs Office on Base Kodiak, and I've been here for just over a year.
All right. Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourselves first before we talk about the birthday that's coming up? It's the Coast Guard birthday, right? So why don't you start?
Okay. You want me?
Yeah, just give a little background about yourself.
All right, sure. So this is Mark Morin, the CEO of the Air Station. I've been in the Coast Guard, came into the Coast Guard in 1991 as a commissioned officer out of OCS, as a pilot. I've been stationed throughout the United States, Chicago, for 4 years and came to Kodiak in 95. I flew here 3 years in the Bering Sea off the back of cutters with the 65 Dolphin, and then transitioned over to the 60, the medium-range recovery helicopter, and then went to Cape Cod after that, and on to a couple of staff assignments. And then, fortunately, I got my wish. 15 years later, I was asked to come back to be the CEO of Air Station Kodiak. So I couldn't be happier than to be here for the next 3 years to be the commanding officer of Air Station Kodiak and to come back to the best aviation assignment I had, 95 to 2000, was Kodiak, Alaska.
And what makes it the best?
I think it's the quality of life, the small community here that we support, the fishing community. We're very connected, if you will. As you know, Kodiak, Bering Sea, Gulf of Alaska, we have some pretty significant weather that comes through this region pretty consistently. And I think having the opportunity to interact with the local fishing community, they respect us very much. We have a great relationship. And I just love the ruggedness of Kodiak, too. So we decided, my wife and I decided, to bring our three boys back and expose them to Alaska and let them experience Alaska for what it is, which is a beautiful place to be.
Right. And do you remember what it was like back when you were first here?
I do. Actually, it hasn't changed a lot. You know, you still have your downtown area still pretty much the same. The flying and the weather is still as challenging as it ever was. They do have the windmills on Pillow Mountain, which weren't here when I was here back in 95, 2000. And local restaurants is still pretty much the same. The communities, a lot of the kids that we knew, a lot of the people that we knew have grown up. Some have moved away. Some are still here. So it's great to engage with them again and to see them as adults now, because my wife was a teacher and taught a lot of the local community the kids here at the school. So it's nice to run into these folks and see them being productive citizens here in Kodiak. So, yeah.
You said you were from Chicago originally?
No, I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. I should have
heard the accent, right?
I should have recognized the accent.
Yeah, so I grew up in New England from Massachusetts, and have two brothers, and have really never knew anything about Alaska until I joined the Coast Guard. I was in the Army before that, so coming over to the Coast Guard, being a pilot in the Coast Guard, was an opportunity to do some traveling to some places that the Army normally isn't stationed at or based at. And so Kodiak is one of those unique places, and so it's just one of the most rewarding assignments I've ever had.
What was it like seeing that contrast between Boston and here?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question because I just came from Hawaii. I was there 5 years, and I really miss the change of seasons. I really like the spring, the winter, the summer, and the fall. And in Hawaii, it's always 80 degrees, beautiful ocean breezes, and just beautiful weather all the time, which is great. But I really miss the change of seasons. Boston and Kodiak, I think the weather is probably very similar. I was stationed in Cape Cod as a pilot, and you have some pretty challenging weather out there as well. I would say there are some similarities, but I think the remoteness of Kodiak, the small community, and the type of people that work here. Fishing community is much different than where I grew up. So I mean, there are similarities. Gloucester, Massachusetts, of course, is a large lobster fishing community as well. We supported them when we were in Cape Cod. But it's just different being in Alaska, especially Kodiak, because we do have a very large AOR, area of responsibility, that we support. Prince William Sound all the way out to the end of the Aleutian Chain, the Gulf of Alaska, the Bering Sea, and now we're on the North Slope as well, providing search and rescue up in that region on the Arctic shelf. So lots going on right now in this Coast Guard community here.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And where did you grow up?
I born in Hawaii and grew up in California and Texas.
Oh, so you were in his birthplace. That's nice, Hawaii. I've never been there. But it sounds pleasant, although I also like seasons. I'm more used to seasons with changing colors and falling leaves and such. But yeah, so what got you to the island?
Well, I was in the Air Force for 4 years out of high school. Got out of the Air Force and ended up joining the Coast Guard in 2005. I was in a station in Texas for my first tour at a rescue boat station, and ended up going to school for public affairs for the Coast Guard.
I feel like there aren't many similarities between Coast Guard people and radio people, but this relocation thing, I'm beginning to see that there is a slight similarity, that I've seen a bunch of radio people who just end up in random places. And do you get to choose where you go sometimes, or is it like when you're younger and you have less experience, you have to like go where they tell you to go, and then when you're older, you have the option?
Are you talking about more experience in the Coast Guard, you mean?
Yeah, like relocation.
Yeah, so relocation, I'm sure it's the same for both of us. We have a dream sheet. They call it a dream sheet. And for officers and enlisted, it's probably about the same. You have like your top 10 picks. And then they have this one geographic area you can say, well, I really don't want to go there if I can avoid it for whatever reason. And so the assignment officers will look at the needs of the Coast Guard, first of all, see if they need your particular skill set. Then they'll look at also kind of your diversifying your resume, if you will, and they'll look at geographic diversity. I'm not sure if it's that way for the enlisted folks. I think sometimes it is because a lot of it's predicated on moving up in the ranks of the military. You know, you want to get promoted, and so for officers, anyways, and I won't speak for Kelly, but Kelly, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I won't speak for Kelly, but for us, it's important as aviators to have some diversity in your resume. And in order to come back to Kodiak as a commanding officer or as the operations officer, you've had to have had an assignment here in Kodiak or in Alaska as an Alaskan qualified aircraft commander.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of the requirements. So it varies. You don't always get your number one pick. It depends what the needs of the Coast Guard are at the time of the assignment. But then there's also other staff assignments you can do other than flying. So getting outside of the normal assignment of aviation for myself, you can go to staff tours. You can go to the Navy War College. You can go to postgraduate schools. So the Coast Guard has a myriad of opportunities outside of just doing your particular expertise, and gives the officer or the enlisted person the opportunity to do something that'll give them more insight into a particular area. For example, I went to Congressional Affairs. I worked 2 years on Capitol Hill, wore a suit, coat, and tie, didn't wear my uniform, and I learned a lot about the legislative process, if you will. So they do those kinds of assignments for officers, and there are enlisted assignments for those as well.
Is it rare for a person to be posted overseas?
We do have overseas assignments. We do have exchange aviation programs. We do have LNO, liaison officer programs, AFRICOM, UCOM. Different combatant commanders have COSIs on their staff. We work in the Pentagon. We work in Congressional Affairs. We work all over the world, really, depending on the assignments. But primarily, it's the United States that most of our COSIs are based out of. We only have about 40,000 Coast Guard folks on active duty. And probably around 5,000 or 6,000 of those are officers, and the other 30, 35 or 34 are enlisted. So we do have those overseas assignments. There's just not as many.
All right. And you're a public affairs officer, right?
Yes.
So would your position tend more towards traveling to places where, like, metropolitan areas like D.C. or...
Exactly. We're mainly based at what we call district offices. So it's usually, like you said, metropolitan areas. A lot of times it's it can be also air stations, wherever there's a lot of activity.
So for him, for example, his office, not office, but the folks that really own his assignment is the district in Juneau. Okay. However, he works here at the air station, and he's really he represents the public affairs detachment, if you will, here at the air station for me. And for anybody else at the air station who may need their expertise with respect to going in front of the media, having talking points, and discussing that before we go live on the air.
Speaking of which, could you tell me about the birthday that's coming up?
Yes. So August 4th, we are celebrating our 225th anniversary for the Coast Guard. It's our birthday. And it's also another milestone for the Coast Guard. It's our 100th birthday for the what we consider the modern Coast Guard that was established in 1915. So two major anniversaries coming up here.
Just to talk about the Coast Guard, a little bit of the Coast Guard history, like Kelly was saying. So 1790 was the birth of the Coast Guard, okay? And we weren't called the Coast Guard back then. We were called the Revenue Cutter Service, Lighthouse Service, Bureau of Navigation, Steamboat Service, and then Life Saving Service. So there was like five agencies back then. And then it wasn't and also, quite honestly, we were the first maritime. We're the oldest maritime organization. Navy wasn't commissioned until 1798. Mm-hmm. So kind of a little bit of a trivia there for you. So 1915, like Kelly was saying, we took all of those agencies that overlapped in different authorities, and we called the Coast Guard, commissioned as the Coast Guard. And then... obviously, the rest is history, 100 years of modern-day Coast Guard, if you will, up until now. And then, obviously, we have the history of the air station here in Kodiak as well. This was a Navy station built, commissioned in 1941. And then in 1947, we had a Coast Guard detachment of PBY Catalina aircraft, which were the kind of aircraft that had a boat-type bottom that would land on the water and would conduct search and rescue out here in this region. And then in 1972, it officially was turned over, the base was turned over to the U.S. Coast Guard.
I'm kind of stuck in the steamboat brigade option. I don't remember exactly what you referred to, but you're like the steamboat patrol or something.
Yeah, steamboat service. So they would do inspections. So that's kind of where we got our... today we have IPSLOs, International Port Security Liaison Officers. They're called IPSLOs. And what they do is they're worldwide assignments. Talking about worldwide assignments, those guys have some pretty unique assignments and gals. And what they do is they'll go down into these foreign ports and they'll do inspections on U.S. flagged vessels. And they'll make sure that they're, you know, ready to go from a safety perspective out to sea. And so that's kind of what we did back in the steamboat service period. We would inspect the steamboats to make sure when they went up and down the rivers that they were safe and you didn't have the types of casualties that you had before that time period, before they implemented the steamboat service.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit more about how the base will be observing the birthday and any other activities that will be happening?
Well, I can tell you that So the way it normally is celebrated is the base. This is kind of unique. So you have a cutter here, you have an air station, and you have a base. And so the base is the support for those operational entities, tenants, okay? So the air station is a tenant of the base. What we're going to do at the air station is it is work day. However, we will be doing some sort of a morale event. It's going to be a pretty interesting morale event, actually. Our morale officer, Scott Woodcock, has put together this kind of a eco-trek type competition. It's going to involve backpacking, trail hiking, putting up tents, starting a fire in this rain, which is going to be difficult. So, yeah, some really neat stuff. And I'm looking forward to it. I hope I can participate. Well, I will participate. But, yeah, so that's kind of what we do usually. And I'm sure the other tenants have their maybe special thing they're going to do that particular day as well to celebrate and recognize that day.
Oh, okay, so different departments have their own plans.
Yeah, they can. It's a significant day, of course, and so we try to accommodate those folks and with morale events.
Okay, what is a morale event?
Morale is basically an opportunity to get people together where you normally don't have an opportunity. You work so hard. This is a very, very busy place, Kodiak. We do a lot of things here, all the different tenants. And so it's an opportunity for us to kind of shut down, if you will, the day of work. And we get together. We'll usually have a barbecue. We'll either play softball, interdepartmental competition, you know, the engineering folks against the operational folks, soccer. I mean, whatever. So really what we have is a morale committee. So the morale committee is represented by a cross-section of the air station, and they make a decision based on what the committee decides and what they want to do for that particular morale day. So we have one morale day per month.
Oh, really? That's kind of how we work. That's a lot. Yeah. One per month.
Yeah,
that's
one per month. Well, you know, it sounds like a lot, but it really isn't when you consider the amount of time people are deployed. We have aircraft deployed on the North Slope, like I was saying. We have aircraft deployed in Cordova. We have aircraft that stand the ready here 24/7, 365. And then we have C-130s that are downrange doing their deployments down in El Salvador. And so there's a lot of things that we do. That we very rarely have the opportunity to spend time together. So even though we have it once a month, we don't capture everybody once a month. We capture just a cross-section of people who happen to be off deployments and happen to be in town that particular day.
Oh, how long is a deployment usually?
It depends. So, for example, we in the North Slope right now, we're at Dead Horse. We have two H-60 Jayhawks up there. And we're covering... from a search and rescue perspective, we're covering it from the end of June or the beginning of July until about the middle of October right now, until the ice starts to form back up and starts to come further south. After that, we take the 60s and we go down to Cold Bay, and we provide the crab fishery search and rescue support if they need it out of Cold Bay, Alaska, from October till about March. So... you know, those guys and gals, they're on the road quite a bit. And then we have the Cordova deployment, which supports the fishery out in Prince William Sound and the Copper River salmon fishery from the May time frame until September. And then we have our 60 crew that supports 60 search and rescue support right out of here in Kodiak. So we technically right now we have three basically ready crews standing by for search and rescue throughout the state of Alaska.
Wow.
And we have our 65s, can't forget about ALPAT, the Alaskan Patrol Aircraft, which is what my first assignment was here, is we deploy in the back of cutters. And these cutters go out to the Bering Sea, and they operate and do the enforcement of laws and treaties for fisheries, make sure that everybody is catching what they catch and are playing by the rules, regulations for the fisheries. And we also conduct search and rescue as well.
How far into the waters does United States maritime law apply?
Well, they usually call that an EEZ, an exclusive economic zone, so 200 nautical miles normally. However, in the Bering Sea, we have a line called the Maritime Boundary Line, and so that's pretty much goes through the Bering Strait west of St. Lawrence Island and St. Paul, and go all the way down to Shemya, if you will, kind of a dissection, if you will, a line going through. And so that left side is international fisheries, and on our side are U.S. fisheries. And so we have the technology to monitor those vessels that are fishing out there to make sure they don't come into the U.S. waters and catch our fish. So they stay on the western boundary line of that maritime boundary line.
Okay, and for the international waters, are those all owned by various countries, or is it kind of like...
No, it's usually international waters. So you have your state waters, you have your EEZs, and you have your international waters. And international waters, depending on the organization, for example, when I was in Hawaii, the international waters were governed by the Western Central Pacific Fishery Commission, WCPFC. And so you're allowed to fish in those international waters, but you also have to be a member of the WCPFC in order to do that. And so that's kind of what it's like. You don't have the EEZs from those countries stretching out that far. So they're mainly in the international water area.
All right. To return back to the birthday events, I'm curious what you did last month's Morale Day. What did your department do?
Last month's Morale Day, I wasn't here.
Oh.
I had my family and I arrived June 6th, and I think the morale event went off on like June 1st. I think a lot of the folks really, they really like to do sporting events. They like to get together and compete. So I don't know exactly what they did, but I'm sure it was fun. Like I said, they usually have a barbecue. People get together. And the day is usually a day of just relaxing with your families, kind of like Coast Guard Day, because all the family members, you go to the Coast Guard Days. You have, you know, all kinds of things set up for the families to participate in, the kids. And so that's kind of what the Coast Guard Days are about. Morale events are usually just for the personnel assigned. However, the families can come and, you know, watch, participate, and have a hot dog or a hamburger, I'm sure. But I don't know what they did. I'm sure it was fun, though.
Yeah. And does your department have its own Morale Day, or does it join with another department?
My office usually joins with another unit.
So there are like three people in your department, right?
There's one other besides me.
There's one other person. The most exciting Morale Day ever. You and that one other person. What department do you join with?
Usually the air station or the base.
Okay. Yeah. They're the big ones. Like all the little departments kind of join with their chosen department.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, he's in a pretty good position because he can pick and choose what Coast Guard Day or Morale event to go to.
Cushy.
Yeah, pretty cushy. The Coast Guard Air Station, we have about 365 people, about 65 pilots, and the rest are enlisted folks. So we have a large group of people that we try to get together with on a regular basis, but like I said, monthly basis. But again, the tempo of operations here is such that we don't always are able to have everybody at the same time get together.
Are there like two options for Morale Days? Like if you're an outdoorsy person, you could join the barbecue and the hike or whatever. And if you're not, you could just stay inside and watch a movie. Is that an option? Or
I don't think watching a movie is an option.
It's not very morale encouraging.
No, but I think, we want you to isolate yourself. But no, I think what it is, there are some of those where you can, there are options. Because obviously not everyone wants to play softball. And not everyone wants to play floor hockey. Some folks want to go on a hiking trip or something, or hike, you know, barometer or something like that. And I think it's important to recognize everybody has different interests, and so we try to accommodate that as well.
Have you hiked barometer?
I haven't hiked it since I've been here. I hiked it back when I was here, 95 or 2000. I hiked it maybe once.
Oh, okay. I'm impressed. Now I have to hike it.
I've not hiked it.
No? Yeah, I have to hike that. I've been listeners, if you've listened to the radio frequently recently, you'll have heard the yoga teacher / hiker telling us all about barometer, and she almost tempted me to go on that one trip, but it's something I need a morale trip. I think the station should have one, and can all go at barometer. I'll suggest it to Jay. We'll see.
Yeah, it's a good hike. It's not it's something that you want to pace yourself, take your time, make sure you take some water with you and some food, because you do get hungry and thirsty. And so just make sure you have something with you in case you need something to eat to replenish your energy.
Right. I know you're very busy, but what do you do to relax? Do you go hiking? Well,
I love to go out with my dog. I have a German Shepherd. I have three boys, we like to hike. I'm introducing my boys to hiking. Like I said, they just got the Kodiak about 6 weeks ago. I bought some ATVs. We've ATV'd a little bit, and I like to introduce them to fishing, of course. We're actually getting ready to go to one of the cabins in the wildlife refuge here this weekend for a few days.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I think it's important to expose them to all of the opportunities here in Kodiak, what it has to offer, and let them make up their own mind as to what they want to do, what they like to do.
How old are your kids?
I've got twin 8-year-olds and I have a 13-year-old.
Oh, wow. So where have they hiked?
Let's see. We've gone over to Spruce Cave. We've hiked over near Fort Abercrombie and Termination Point.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, these Kodiak kids are tough stuff because coming from where I'm from, those hikes are pretty challenging. Termination Point. I just went with a little like 5-year-old and 8-year-old to the end of Termination Point and back. And we were very impressed because they were holding up pretty well.
Yeah, we didn't go the whole way. We just kind of walked in a little bit. You know, you've got Pushki out there and the bears and stuff. So we just kind of, you know, we don't want to overwhelm them.
Right, it's wise.
But we want to at least let them know that, hey, these opportunities are out here. It's fun to get out in the woods.
Yeah, well, we took that 5-year-old all the way to the end. you probably made the better decision. He did slow down a little bit towards the end of that 4-hour hike,
yeah.
But still very impressive. Have you gone hiking? Have you do you have a favorite spot in Kodiak or?
A little bit of hiking, but mountain bike and a little bit of fishing.
Oh, you mountain bike?
Yes.
Oh, where is a good mountain biking? Area?
I've done just trails near. Our Aviation Hill housing area, and around near the airport, there's some trails.
Yeah, nice. I saw someone biking up Pillar Mountain once. I don't know if that was even possible. I didn't see him go up the really tough part, but I'm just going to pretend he stopped because I can't imagine him continuing up that.
Right.
But apparently people do because there's a race, right? There's a Pillar Mountain race. That happens?
Yeah, there's a race. I think it's a foot race, too, that I remember. And there used to be a golf course competition up Pillar. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that one. That was back in the mid-90s they had that here. It was pretty neat. But they would actually have a golfing competition going up Pillar Mountain.
Well, I guess it's a little flat up there, huh?
Yeah, well, they have one cup or one hole with the flag, and you'd have to – how many strokes would it take you to get a ball all the way up Pillar? So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for joining me for Talk the Rock.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you for having us.